Cares Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, KUSD's Fine Arts Department will present the annual Jazz Festival on Saturday, November 11th at Indian Trail. The concert starts at 6:30 p.m. and tickets are $8. They can be purchased online at kusd.edu/finearts.
Local farm fresh produce is still available at Kenosha Winter Harbor Market from Living Hope Farm. Current offerings at this Saturday's market include various squash, tomatoes, broccoli, leafy greens, and root vegetables. Open from 10 till 2, the market is a supporter of WGTD.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD and this our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. A few times in a lifetime, you might be fortunate enough to know a person who is wise and multi-talented and who has the unique gift of giving multiple gifts of spirit to others. The person I'm interviewing today has helped hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals and families through good times and bad times, has strengthened the greater vision of those he has served, and has made an enormous mark on our community, state, and beyond. And so it's a special honor for me to have with us today in my studio the Reverend Dr. Tony Larson of the Olympia Brown Unitarian Universalist Church in Racine. Tony will be leaving as the minister of this church after serving 42 years as its spiritual leader. Today, we will reflect with him on those 42 years, what he has seen over that time in our community and our nation, and what he has learned over those years. Welcome, Tony, and thanks much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me.
Let's start with your history. Your history as a little boy, many of our listeners may not know that while you are a UU minister, you actually were raised in a Catholic family. And I thought maybe you could just give our listeners a brief history of your growing up years and what your family was like.
Well, we were a pretty devout family, and I wanted, when I was probably 7 years old, I wanted to become a priest. And I already knew my oldest sister was going to become a nun, and my other brother became a Franciscan brother. So out of the six of us, three of us went into religious life. And so my my dad actually built a little church for me in the backyard that I'd pretend to say Mass in. And had a little tabernacle with a key and a lock and a little chalice, and we would put water with red food coloring in for the wine. And for the hosts, we would take a loaf of bread, you know, take a slice of bread and smash it down and make a circle out of it. And so, you know, we did that. So all those years, I really looked forward to being a priest. After eighth grade, instead of just going to a regular high school, I went to a Catholic seminary high school and then went on for the next 10 years until I got my master's degree in theology. And that's when I changed course.
Okay. And just go back to those seminary years for a minute, because you must see 14-year-olds and think, boy, at 14 I made this, you know, huge decision. But obviously it was in you from when you were little. But so you were 14. And was there any pressure for you to go, or did you really just want to?
No, you know, there really wasn't pressure. In fact, a number of people, including the local priest, said, you know, you might want to go to regular high school and wait until then to go in. But I just really wanted to go in. Mm-hmm. And although it cost my parents a lot of money, they got, you know, they got some discounts because we were poor. But no one really encouraged me to go in at 14. Okay. I was the one who really wanted to. The trouble was, once I got there, I was so homesick. I wanted to leave after the third day. I wanted to go home. And the rector there said, well, you know, it is hard the first couple of days, but at least give it more time. And then I thought to myself, all right, I'll give it a month or two. And as it turned out, our class was doing a Halloween play, all the classes did a play, and I was helping to write it and put it together. And so I decided I would leave right after the Halloween play. I thought that'd be a good mm-hmm. time. And then when Halloween, the October 31st came by, I thought, you know, November is not that much farther, and I can probably make it another month or two. And for Thanksgiving, we got to go home. And after I got home for Thanksgiving, I thought, well, Christmas is just a month away. I can probably make another month. And then after Christmas, I thought, well, the semester ends at the end of January. I can probably make it to then. And after that, I didn't feel
like
I didn't want to go uh-huh. back home.
How many children in your family, maybe?
Six.
You said? Six.
Six kids. Okay, I'm the baby.
Okay. So it must have been just always a lot of commotion, a lot of people, and that I suppose that that's different. Was the seminary a lot like being in a regular high school, except with a special emphasis on religion?
Well, it was more than that because, you know, you're living with the people. It might be a little bit like a boarding school, but on the other hand, there were special rules. There was the grand silence at 9 o'clock. You couldn't talk to anybody.
9 p.m.
And we'd go to Mass every day, and we had prayers in the afternoon and prayers at night. So there was a lot more ritual and prayer connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
On the good side of that, I learned to do Gregorian chant pretty well.
I think all of us who grew up Catholic kind of knew that.
Yeah, I can still chant the Pater Noster or the uh-huh. Lord's Prayer,
or the Mass in Latin.
Oh yes, I knew Deum Quili Tibicat, etc., etc.
So by senior year, are they really direct? I mean, you're in a seminary, mm-hmm. so they know you're going on to be a priest. So
right.
then, is the curriculum more toward that? And
yes, it's pretty much like a prep school in the sense that it was mostly kids who did pretty well in school, so the uh-huh. standards were fairly high. But they knew that a lot of people, you know, a lot of kids wouldn't go into the college seminary, and
okay.
a lot didn't. I'd say in our class we started out with 28 people in the freshman year, and 10 of us graduated from the Catholic.
And you started with how many?
28.
28. Okay.
We went to school down the hill at the diocesan seminary for most of our classes.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 of us graduated out of that, so, you know, about one third. And then when it came time to go to the college seminary, I think maybe 4 of us went.
Okay, so there was a lot of attrition there.
Yeah.
So what was it that finally turned you from Catholic ministry to ministry in the UU Church? Well, first you were ordained, right?
No, I wasn't ordained Catholic.
Oh, you were not?
No. I was ordained in one of the lower levels, lector, which is
okay.
an old order that isn't actually, doesn't really count for much anymore. But it wasn't even subdeacon or anything. So what actually made me change was that in college, I realized I didn't believe a lot of the things that the Catholic Church taught. And I felt that I probably shouldn't be a priest if I didn't,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it'd be one thing if it was just a few things, but it turned out, I thought, to be way too many. And I do remember in our novitiate year, which was after college, I met some Catholics who, when I told them I was leaving the seminary to become a Unitarian minister, they almost said, thank God, because they knew that I didn't, you know,
right.
I didn't believe enough of the things that you really should believe.
And it's interesting because I go to the Olympia Brown Church also, and it's interesting how many people were Catholic and are
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And I think almost all of us, it's the same thing. It's some of the structural things that, or the belief systems
yeah.
that we have trouble buying into.
Right. I would say that the wonderful thing I got from my Catholic background, and especially the Maryknoll Seminary that I was in, was an appreciation for social justice.
Yes.
That was heavily emphasized. Maryknoll is a missionary society, and so they'd go to other countries and see the poverty there and try to work
mm-hmm.
not just on people's spiritual needs, but on their physical needs and social needs. And
And that really carries into today.
Yeah, it carries into. So that part I got from the Catholic Church, and I'm really grateful for that. The other thing I'm very grateful for is when I studied in college, I majored in philosophy, and that includes looking at the great questions like the question of God and proofs for God or arguments
afterlife,
for God.
Afterlife, yeah.
Yeah, afterlife, all those things. And they helped me question things that I had taken for granted, and that's partly why I felt I had to leave. I just didn't believe some of those things anymore.
I feel the same way when I stopped being a Catholic, at least mentally, was in my teen years. And then beyond that, I just stopped going. But I think one of the things that is good, I do the same thing, because for a while I just thought, oh, how could I, you know, ever have even been with them? But I really got a lot of being an introspective person, I think, by being raised, going to a Catholic school when I was in the early grades of grade school. But so how did your parents and your family deal? Was that hard for you to tell them, and how did they deal with it?
Yeah, it was hard. It wouldn't have been so bad if I had just said I was leaving the seminary and was not going to be a priest. They always knew that was a possibility anyway.
Did you think about that, by the way? When the senior year came?
Well, I didn't actually leave until after my master's in theology.
Okay.
But I knew I still wanted to do ministry. I just didn't feel that the Catholic Church was the right place for my sake and for their sake. And so I started having questions about things. And probably my senior year in college is when I was really starting to ask questions, but I still stayed for another 2 years.
Oh, okay.
I forgot, what was the question?
I'm sorry.
Family.
I interrupted your question. How your parents and your family reacted, and how you told them.
Yes. I told them, we wrote all the time. In those days, telephone calls were very expensive.
I remember.
So I wrote to them about my decision to leave. It ended up being fairly traumatic for both of them. My dad would write every week. He would write me a letter, a long letter, writing in the arguments for various religious doctrines, hoping that he would convince me. And of course, it was all stuff I'd already studied and knew about. So it was hard for them. In fact, when people in their Catholic church would ask them, "How is your son Tony doing?" They would say, "He's fine."
Yeah.
You know. In fact, someone asked my dad, "How's your son Tony doing?" And he said, "That's personal."
And your mom thought you'd reconvert sometime. Huh?
Yeah, I think she went to her death thinking I'd probably reconvert. My dad didn't think that, but he felt eventually that God is big enough to include everybody, and that wouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about what is really you could have left the Catholic Church and just not gone to a church, or you could have left the Catholic Church and gone somewhere else, but what's the core of Unitarian Universalism that drew you and draws others to it?
Right. You know how a lot of religions have a creed that people assent to or agree to? Like the Nicene Creed or the Apostles' Creed, things like that. In Unitarian Universalism, we don't have a creed. We have principles, including affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person, or as we say for the children, all people are important, and social justice and caring for the world, equality, freedom, and taking care of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that unite us. In a word, love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love your neighbor as yourself, and love the whole world that way too. So that's what really unites us. So in a Unitarian Universalist church, you will find atheists and theists and even polytheists all together, because if you love your neighbor as yourself because you think God wants you to. Or because you're serving God that way, and I love my neighbor as myself because I just think it's the best way to live as a human being, why do we have to fight over that?
Mm-hmm.
We can find it more interesting than divisive,
mm-hmm.
and we do. So we have people with a lot of different beliefs.
Yes, yes, we do. And, you know, it's interesting because when you read our seven principles, they're short. Mm-hmm. They're to the core. And most people would say, I agree with these seven principles.
Right.
And, of course, love is hopefully at the core of,
yes,
of most religions. It's almost like it's the good values of Christianity and other religions, mm-hmm, without having all that dogma attached.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with religion. You know, after you were ordained, how did you end up at Olympia Brown? Did you visit like a lot of different congregations? And
no, what happened was when I was in my last year at the Unitarian Seminary, I put in an application to send my what we call our packet with materials with some of my sermons, things about me, etc. And each person who's like me is doing that sends out 10 packets to congregations that the Unitarian Universalist Association thinks you might be a good fit for. And so I sent my packets out. And I got a call from one church in California, and I think one in Minnesota, and the Racine Church, though, was actually winding down. They had been going through their packets of all the people that had sent things into them, and when they got mine, they decided that maybe I was the one that they would want to ask. And so they called and asked if I would candidate at the church. And at first I didn't want to because I thought I haven't had a chance to explore all these others. But they explained that they were at the end of their process and they really thought I was the right one. So I did. I said, okay. And I met with them and they called me to be the minister. And then the congregation voted on me. I spent a week Sunday and then the week and the next Sunday and did the two Sunday services. And after the end of the second Sunday service, they took a vote while I was out of the room, and they decided to call me.
Fantastic. Do you know if it was unanimous?
No, it wasn't unanimous. I think it was not everyone was there, but I think there were probably about 100 people for the congregational meeting. And I'd say I think the vote was something like 94-3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were young. You were how old?
I was 26.
26. Mustache, guitar-playing young man. And
yeah. Yeah.
For a while, when you first came, you were minister for Kenosha as well as Racine?
Yes.
How did that work out?
That worked out at a Unitarian Universalist General Assembly. I had gone to a workshop that talked about, they called it Divide to Grow. And they explained that most churches, 80% of the people come from within a 5-mile radius.
Okay.
And they said, you know, you can never expect to get a lot more from outside that radius because, you know, that's 20, 25 minutes or whatever. That's mm-hmm. it's gonna take you too long to get there. And I noticed that the Racine downtown where our church is and the Kenosha downtown were exactly 10 miles apart. And I thought we had a significant number of people, a minority, but a significant minority of people coming up from Kenosha anyway. So I talked with them about starting their own group, and mm-hmm. we did. So we got that started in the late 70s, and eventually they were on their own. So I did a service in Kenosha at 9 o'clock or 9:30, and then in Racine at 11. So I'd finish the service and kind of zip up to Racine, and mm-hmm. if it was winter and snowy, you know, I had to.
It's a little dicey.
A little dicey, but I never missed anything. So,
yeah.
But I had it set up so that announcements would be at the end of the Kenosha service, so I could skip out of those.
Okay.
And they would be at the beginning of the Racine church. So if I didn't make it to the announcements,
you'd be there for the service. Did you ever guess, Tony, that you would stay at Olympia Brown for 42 years? How did it happen that you stayed that long? And is that usual?
Yeah, no, it's very unusual. I'm probably a record in the Unitarian Universalist Association. In churches like the Methodists and the Catholics, where and the Presbyterians to some extent, where the denomination sends you different places, mm-hmm. you know, you go wherever you're sent.
Right.
In Unitarian Universalism, as well as in Congregationalism, the congregation decides and the minister. Uh-huh. So that's it. That's a mutually agreed upon thing. And even for ordination, the congregation ordains our ministers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other ministers can have a part in it, but it's the congregation that does it.
Did you ever think about leaving sooner than that?
Oh, yeah. After the first few years, I'd say after the honeymoon period was over, I certainly wondered mm-hmm. whether it would be good to go somewhere else. But I didn't actively pursue it. And then later, a couple different other churches asked if I would talk with them, including one in Kenosha, and in Chicago. And I did actually consider going mm-hmm. there, and I met with them. But I decided it was good to see what else was there. But I felt that I liked what I was doing in Racine, and so I stayed.
What are the benefits, as you see them, of having been at our church for so long, and were there any drawbacks?
Right. Well, actually, after I'd been there for 15 years, I went to a special workshop put on by the Alban Institute, which does a lot of clergy and church-related seminars. And it was, on long-term ministries. And they said, and this has proved to be true, the benefit of a long-term ministry is that the same minister who dedicated or baptized your child may be the one who performs the marriage for that child. And we had one case where one of our members who grew up in the church and was dedicated at a Christmas Eve service, about 30 years later, we ordained her at the same spot in the same church.
Something?
It was kind of cool. So there is something about, for a lot of people, I'm the continuity for the church just because uh-huh. I've been there so long. Now, there have been people there have been a lot longer than me, but, I've been more visible. So the beauty of it is people get to know you and you get to know them. The pitfalls are it's easy for the church and the minister to fall into just a comfortable state,
yeah.
Where neither one wants to challenge the other.
Or try new things.
And try new things. And so that was one of the things I learned from the workshop. They said, you need to, try new things, do things differently, ask for input. Because people who have known you for a long time, they may say, I really don't like his sermons, but he was there for me when my mother died, so I don't want to say anything critical. He said, you really have to ask for criticism.
Uh-huh.
And so I did.
Mm-hmm. You're unusual, not only in having stayed at Obuck for so many years, but also for our listeners, the fact that you are a gay man, married now that it's finally legal,
right.
to Craig, your gay husband. I don't really know this. When did you tell the congregation? When did you know you were gay? And when did you come out to Obuck? And kind of how was that received?
When I first came, I thought maybe I was bisexual. But in 4 or 5 years, I realized I was gay. And the interdistrict representative of the Unitarian Universalist Association was coming to our congregation to do a board retreat, and he and I talked, and he said he thought it would be a good idea to come out to the leadership of the church. And so I did, and they were all fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably we had a few families leave the church. But not very many, and some of them came back.
So then the leadership just sort of word of mouth.
Yes.
Was out. You didn't make
right.
an announcement.
I didn't make a big announcement,
okay.
right.
Until
Craig and I, when we decided to have a unity ceremony, of course it wasn't a legal wedding at that time,
right.
But when we did that, we did invite the whole congregation. But since Craig was going to be teaching, had gone back to college to get his teaching degree, he didn't want to have anything in print
mm-hmm.
that could cause problems later
right.
on. So it was all, we did it word of mouth, but it was fairly public. And we didn't even have an order of service printed up or anything like that. So then when we were able to legally get married a couple of years ago. We had another ceremony. Partly, we weren't going to do that. We thought, well, we don't need one. We feel that we've been married all these years. Mm-hmm. But a number of people said, but we didn't get to be there. And besides, you're not just celebrating your wedding. You're celebrating the fact that everyone has a right to get married now.
Yes.
And so we did that. And, of course, this time it was a little different. We did have everything in print.
Mm-hmm. And it helps to be legally married, does it not?
Oh, yeah.
With a lot of the laws. And
Yes, and one of them I just personally found out about, and that was that Social Security, I can go on Craig's Social Security before I go on my own. And so that's a gigantic benefit that I'm sure a lot of people aren't even aware of. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of it until the Social Security people told me. They said, you know, you are married. Do you realize if you put off getting your own Social Security at 70, you can take a smaller Social Security thing because of your marriage? And so I said, ooh,
so
okay.
Finally the right thing happened.
I forgot what married people get.
You were actually, you two were the first gay couple married in Racine, is that right?
Well, we were the first to get a marriage license.
Okay.
But we were the second couple in Racine to get married. Mm-hmm. And we heard actually from some people in other parts of the country, because when all this was going on and there were things on the news, mm-hmm. Craig and I showed up on some newscasts,
yes,
apparently.
Yes.
So.
Yes, we have a great quote with, I think it's our church, standing on the side of love.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
You know, we wanted that for so many years, and it finally happened.
Yeah,
happened that the American people, you know, within 10 years, they were doing all that DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act against gays being married, and within 10 years, it was just like everybody, I think it was the young people just caused
it. Yeah, it was a surprise. I thought the best we would ever get would be recognition of a domestic partnership.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it was recognized not as only as that, but as a marriage with all the legal benefits is something I didn't expect in my lifetime.
Right.
So that did surprise me pleasantly, and mm-hmm. it was a great celebration. And the other thing that I learned from that celebration was how happy people in the church were to be celebrating this with us.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't just like, oh, that's nice, have a good time on your own. It was, we really want to be here, mm-hmm. And it was wonderful.
I think justice ultimately prevails. You know, the arc of justice is long.
Yeah, that's what Martin Luther King Jr. said,
yeah.
Theodore Parker. And
mm-hmm. For our listeners, Tony's last day prior to retirement, I don't think I said this, is Sunday, December 31st, and we're celebrating some things on December 15th weekend. So if you want any information on that, 634-0659, you can get some information about our December 15th weekend. And I know, Tony, you and Craig will be staying in Racine largely because of the health needs of Craig's 96-year-old father.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to work for you and Craig? And what criteria does UUA put because you're staying? You mentioned before, I mean, the Catholic priests just send them away to a new and most churches probably do.
Right, yeah.
But you are staying in the community.
Right. We're staying in the community, and the normal process is that the congregation gets an interim minister, basically a transition minister, and one has been called, and her name is Marlene, and she's going to be here. Once I leave, she's going to be here for 2.5 years, and she's going to help the congregation. For one thing, she'll do ministerial duties and preaching and all those things, visiting the sick, et cetera, teaching, but she will also help the congregation think about what they want in their next settled minister. And it's especially important, given that I've been here for over 40 years, mm-hmm. for a lot of people in our church, I'm the only Unitarian minister they've ever known. They may have heard a few in pulpit exchanges or seen them in other places, but they haven't really experienced Unitarian Universalist ministry with anyone other than me. And so it's important for them to see that there are different forms.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure what Marlene will do will be somewhat different from what I did, and the minister who follows her will be too. But she's going to help the congregation assess its strengths and weaknesses and see what they're really looking for the future. Mm-hmm. And so then the rule for me and Craig, especially for me. But since Craig, for the spouse, you know, he didn't sign on for this per se. But it's cleaner if he and I both stay away from the church during that interim period, and it's a little longer than usual. Usually it's a year or maybe 2 years, but now it's going to be 2 years and a half. So what I'm doing is I'm speaking at other Unitarian Universalist congregations.
You mean when you get into retirement?
Yes, right, when I get into retirement, yeah. Starting in January, I'll be preaching at other churches in Wisconsin, some of whom don't have a minister or only have a part-time minister, so it works nicely for their schedules and for me. And but we can't go to our church or to meetings and social events associated with it. And
the rationale of UUA is that it makes the transition?
It makes the transition healthier because otherwise it would be the new minister is trying to do her job and people might be coming to me or coming to Craig or me and saying, I don't like what this new minister is doing. That's not the way Tony did it. And I don't want to get drawn into those conversations. They need, since I will no longer be their minister, even when I come back after a few years, I won't be their minister. I'll be minister emeritus, but I will not be their pastor.
Right.
And so it's important for people to get used to that, and I can help that by keeping a respectful distance during that time.
And for our listeners who may not know, besides being minister of this church for so many years, Tony's just done so much out in the community and been very active. Numerous boards, I could read the list, and it's pretty amazing. And he does the vigils when someone is, when there's a murder in Racine. The RIC, Racine Interfaith Coalition, has these vigils, and Tony leads with song and words, which we'll hear later on. But it's going to be hard for you probably not to be able to go to things, and you can't do weddings or funerals or baptisms or...
Yeah, not at least not...
Not here.
Not here or for people in the church.
Okay.
Some
Could
people
you
say,
do
well,
one?
What if we did, what if we get married at someplace else? I still can't do it because that would normally be they would ask their own minister.
Right.
So anything that even is close to that,
right,
I can't do.
So
yeah, it's going that part. That's going to be hard.
Yeah. And how are you preparing yourself? You know, I feel like people, as December 31st nears, a lot of us are just feeling sadder, and you know, it's an achy kind of feeling.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with?
Well, you know, I still think that Shakespearean phrase "sweet sorrow," you know, or if you like Khalil Gibran, you know, about joy and sorrow. If you look at whatever you are joyous about, it is something that probably gave you pain at another time. And when you see yourself crying or in pain, you are weeping for that which has been your delight. And so I think it makes sense. It's the same reason we cry at funerals. We cry because we're sad, but we're also celebrating, and there are sometimes happy tears in that. Now, in this case, it's not like I'm dying, but I will be away, so I will be gone from my ministerial role. And so that's going to be hard
for me,
as well as the congregation.
Right. I think it's just going to be hard for all of us. And, you know, grief, it's really a kind of grieving that we're doing.
Yeah, it is a kind of grief.
That we will be doing and are doing now. And there's only grief, as you noted, because there's also love. And so we're all connected. looking back, Tony, how do you compare yourself as a young minister to the minister you are today? You know, how have you grown or changed in your role? And is that youthful guy still there?
Yeah, the youthful guy is still there.
We can tell.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, in the beginning, when you're youthful, people call you immature. And when you're in your 60s, like me, then they say, oh, he just has a big child inside.
Yes.
You know? The difference was, for one thing, I saved my sermons from those days, and some of them were kind of sappy. You know, I mean, I can tell that, and maybe sent too sentimental or too positive. You know, like just love everybody, and that was kind of it over and over again. I'm sure that got tiresome, without actually going into the deep issues with death and suffering and injustice, etc. So I think in the beginning, I was, you know, the sermons weren't as good and they didn't have as much depth. The other thing was I learned that because my experience had only been in the Catholic Church, I thought that people would do whatever the priest says. So I thought they would, you know, if I would say, I want the mm-hmm. congregation to all come out to this event on World Hunger or whatever. Well, they didn't all do that. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Right. I thought, you know, don't they do what the minister says? And they said, well, you're the minister, but, you know, we're thinking right. people too. And, you know.
In fact, one of the things I was going to say, too, about the Unitarian Universalism is it's actually based much more on questioning than it is having the
yes,
answers.
Right.
And that's a huge thing. And so,
right. There's a joke about, you know, some churches say, come here to have all your questions answered. If we had a sign, it would be, come here to have all your answers questioned.
Yeah. That's good. I hadn't heard that one. I think, you know, we look back on life and we all have some regrets about our own history. Do you have any regrets, or is there anything you wish you might have done differently?
Not particularly. Certainly there were individual mistakes I made that, with the hindsight, I wouldn't do again. On the other hand, as they say, good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of experience comes from bad judgment. Mm-hmm. So if you don't make the mistakes and learn from them, you wouldn't have the wisdom later to do better. So I think the mistakes I made, I learned from, and uh-huh. they kind of helped to make me and the church what we are today. So yeah. I don't think I really want to regret those.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's what we do when we get older, too, is we look back. And I think for most of us, we say we at least were trying our best all
yeah.
along the way.
Right.
And like you said, you learn yeah. from the mistakes. One of the things you brought that's amazing, well, I just want to say there's so much in your legacy to praise. Tony recently, I'm telling our listeners, spoke a very moving sermon about resume versus legacy. I don't think uh-huh. legacy was...
Oh, yeah, resume virtues versus eulogy virtues.
Eulogy.
And it's based mm-hmm. on David Brooks' book. I don't remember his book, but he's a columnist for the New York Times. And you know, he made the point that your resume tells all the good things that
right.
you've done.
All the committees, all the awards.
All the committees, all the boards, all the awards. But what they really talk about your funeral is the way you were with people.
Yes.
You know, the kindness, mm-hmm. you know, how involved were you in helping other people. And that doesn't always get put on a resume.
Right.
And so his point was, even if we have a good resume, wouldn't it be more important to mm-hmm. get a good eulogy?
Yes.
And try to do the things that people will remember long after you're gone.
And it's interesting, at the funerals you do, people get up and speak about the person, and
right.
They never are talking about the boards they've been on or the honors, but they're really talking about
right.
their legacy.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, you've got an amazing legacy here. And for our listeners, Racine Interfaith Coalition had a dinner in Tony's honor, and 200 people came, and you got 3 standing ovations. But
yeah,
nice. You are dearly loved in this community and for all the things that you've done. One of the things you started was the splitting the collection. Can you tell our listeners
about that?
Oh, yeah.
We heard about that from other churches, that they would take the collection plate, and when the money goes in the plate, they would give half to the church and half to some organization that works for social justice. So this is a collection plate. It's not necessarily people's, you know, the pledge money that they give to the church, usually by check or something. So we have once a month, usually on the first Sunday, we'll have an organization to speak about what they do, and then half of the cash at that collection, or split the plate, collection will go to on their behalf, and we do that for the month, and
every month.
Yeah, every mm-hmm. month, and so.
And it's unusual to give half the collection. You know, it's hard financial times for everybody.
Right,
did
it
you
is.
Get much pushback ever?
We did. We every once in a while people say, "Well, charity begins at home," but when social justice and caring for others is the main focus of your religion, you know, we're not focused on
Right.
Whether God is three persons or, mm-hmm. you know, or whether Krishna was divine or anything like that. We're really focused on loving your neighbor. And so it seemed to us that we could be doing something as a congregation. So we continue to do it. Sometimes it makes financial things a little dicey. But on the other hand, some people give more knowing that it's going to a good cause. They hear someone speak. Some of our last ones have been going to some of the schools in Racine, especially since some of them are named after people who were prominent members of our church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Gilbert Knapp and J.I. Case and Andy Fratt, Olympia Brown. I'm probably forgetting someone, but so some of those churches, those schools rather, are getting some of our collection.
We're trying to save a little time here for a song at the end, but I wonder, Tony, if this time has gone so fast, but are there any final words you'd like to say to the community or the congregation or in general?
Okay. One of the things I found helpful for me in planning for the end, someone said to, and it was speaking to ministers, he said, you should remember that you were never the ministry. You were just a form that the ministry took. And the ministry goes on without you. And I like to think that I know that the church will go on. It'll be a little different, but it will be somewhat changed because I was here, and mm-hmm. it'll be changed by everyone who is there in the future. And just as the congregation goes back 175 years, I'm hoping it'll continue to go and continue to do good deeds. It was always involved in social action, women's rights, civil rights, mm-hmm. et cetera. So
we're working hard on immigration rights.
Immigration right now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very important. I think we just have a minute or so to say something about the phrase we use at the end of our service, which Tony always says.
Peace and unrest.
Peace and unrest. But prior to that, you say, this service has ended, your service has begun again. And
yeah.
then everybody says peace and unrest.
Right.
You
right.
want to just say a quick thing about that and we'll hear your song.
That comes actually from the Quaker tradition where someone was going to a Quaker meeting, you know, where they're pretty much silent. He came to the meeting and he's waiting for something to happen and said, when does the service begin? And the friend said, the service comes after the meeting. That is, you do your service to humanity. That's mm-hmm. the real service. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say this service has ended, but your service has begun again.
It's really nice. And then the whole peace and unrest
peace
suggests
and unrest.
That peace is really important, but without unrest, you don't go out and do things. So
right, exactly.
It's wonderful. In honor of the Reverend Dr. Tony Larson's life work for justice and peace, Tony will be closing with a song that he wrote and that we sing at our community vigils. Again, the vigils are sponsored by the Racine Interfaith Coalition, but we get together at the site where a person has been murdered, and we join together. I first want to read these few words by a hero, a UU hero, Jim Henson, best known for the Muppets and for his imagination. He wrote the following. When I was young, my ambition was to be one of the people who made a difference in this world. My hope still is to leave the world a little bit better for my having been there. It's a wonderful life, and I love it. So thanks, Tony, for your 42 years devotion to OBAC and this community and for making the world a little bit better for having been there. For that and for joining us today, I thank you, Tony. And this is Tony's song that he wrote and sings at all of the vigils.
I have a dream within my heart. I have a dream within my heart. And for a world that's come apart, I have a dream. I have a dream within my heart. I have a dream within my heart. And for a world that's come apart, I have a dream. I have a hope. I have a hope within my heart. I have a hope within my heart. And for a world that's come apart, I have a hope. I have a hope within my heart. I have a hope within my heart. And for a world that's come apart, I have a hope. I have a prayer. I have a prayer.